Y'all excited to be here? Y'all excited to be here in the rain?
Yeah!
That's right. It just rain's not going to stop us, but we are going to stop at oil terminal.
It's the end of January in 2018, and we're standing in a large crowd of Vancouver, Washington area residents, celebrating Governor Jay Inslee's decision to pull the plug on North America's largest oil-by-rail terminal, slated for the Port of Vancouver.
Thank you, Governor Inslee, for listening to the people who submitted more than 1.3 million comments against the Tesoro Savage project. Thank you for saying no to this project that was wrong for Vancouver, wrong for the state of Washington, and wrong for the planet. And now, Governor, please help us move on to a renewable energy future by recognizing that natural gas is not a bridge fuel.
You're listening to Holding the Thin Green Line, Part 1, the world's largest methanol refinery.
We found out that the city and the port were planning to build the world's largest methanol refinery right here in our port.
While communities across the Pacific Northwest were defeating coal and oil projects, new frack gas proposals began to slip under the radar. In 2014, Northwest Innovation Works, a Chinese government-backed company, signed preliminary leases with the ports of Kalama, Washington, Port Westwood, Oregon, and Tacoma to build three massive methanol refineries. These facilities would import frack gas from Canada and refine it into methanol, which would be shipped to China to manufacture plastics.
We had a problem here with our daily newspaper. They were throwing about 70 to 100,000 plastic bags every week with advertisements in them. And we got really upset and we decided to go to these neighborhood councils to get the community to put pressure on the city and on the paper to stop this ridiculous littering with plastic bags. So I went to a neighborhood council to talk about the plastic bags. And when they introduced the methanol project, suddenly, it was very clear that those plastic bags, while a nuisance, were just like a drop in a bucket compared to being the world's largest plastic spigot to the world.
Claudia Riedner has lived in Tacoma since 1998. She is a ceramic artist and co-founder of the grassroots environmental group Redefine Tacoma.
I went home with a really heavy heart, and the first thing I did was research about what methanol was and where else in the world they were doing this. Finally, I was so concerned that I started the Move On petition.
I saw Claudia Riedner's water petition.
Nanette Reitz lives in Northeast Tacoma and is part of Redefine Tacoma.
I thought, what the heck is this? I didn't know anything about it. She actually had her phone number on there and I called her and she set up a meeting at our local community.
We decided that it was really important to go to the different neighborhoods and have different meetings. So the first meeting we organized was shortly thereafter in Northeast Tacoma, directly downwind from the port. We had a completely full house. We were totally shocked how many people showed up.
My wife went to a meeting. She came home and said, you're not going to believe this.
Val Pifone is a union representative and Tacoma activist.
We started to research and learn about the methanol refinery, the water it was going to consume, and the greenhouse gases it was going to emit. It became really obvious that this is a big problem and somebody has to step up to stop it.
We tried to talk to the city council. They would politely listen to us, but we would not elicit any responses.
They told us that they couldn't speak on the project, that they basically had a gag order. And then we find out that our mayor was in a video promoting it.
There was Jay Inslee, our governor, Marilyn Strickland, our then mayor of Tacoma, and Connie Bacon, who was a port commissioner at the time, touting methanol, touting the environmental benefits.
Tacoma is one of the few places in the Northwest where you've got a big industrial city that has a legacy of heavy contamination.
Eric DePlace is director of the Thin Green Line at Sightline Institute in Seattle.
You had the Arsarco smelter, you've got paper and pulp production at a massive scale, oil refinery that's still there. We had a joke about it when I was a kid, the Tacoma aroma, the smell that you'd notice when you were passing by the port area.
For tens of thousands of years, the port of Tacoma was an estuary. That was one of the most biologically rich and diverse areas in this region.
Bill Capinci teaches literature and creative writing at the University of Puget Sound.
Then in a little more than a century, it has become one of the most toxic places in the United States.
Arsarco was basically a big smelter.
Todd Hay leads a data team at the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration and is president of Advocates for Cleaner Tacoma.
They would do mining for copper north of Lake Chelan, and they'd rail it into the old Asarco smelter, and they'd smelt that down, releasing a whole bunch of lead and arsenic into the air. And so it created a pretty massive plume.
The stack was here when I moved here, and shortly after I moved here, they took it down. I thought we were working towards a cleaner, greener Tacoma, and busy raising my kids, I didn't realize till several years later the industries that they've allowed to come in and continue to pollute.
A lot of the ports built on fill material that they brought in, say from the old Asarco slag, well, it's just toxic waste under there. The Tacoma Pierce County Health Department is continuing to do soil removals, even to this day, where the plume impacted the neighbors.
We've seen this history of, oh, we need these projects like Asarco, but then we can't use the land for anything else until later. We have to clean it up. And guess who pays? The public pays for it all the time.
Kristen Eng is a Tacoma lawyer who is running for a position on the Port of Tacoma Commission.
Corporations leave, or they only want to clean up half of it or a quarter of it. Otherwise, they say, well, we'll file bankruptcy.
We heard about a meeting called the Thin Green Line. That's where we met Eric Duplass. And we realized just how threatened our little green ribbon of environment is by all these fossil fuels that are being fracked and extracted, and they need to find a way to market, and a way to market goes right through the Puget Sound area.
Northeast British Columbia, northern Alberta have just staggering reserves of natural gas trapped in these geological formations. But there are very few places that they can take the gas. By far the closest destination for these oceans of fracked gas is the Pacific Northwest. If we don't consume it, if we don't export it, if we don't convert it into a petrochemical, they don't have a market for it, and so it will stay locked up under the ground.
When people come together, there is power in numbers. We had the community, and the community was going to hold our elected officials responsible. They were going to hold this company responsible. People were going at noon on a Thursday to a port commission meeting. You have a brief amount of time to do what they call public comment at those meetings. And so you get up there and you say what you have to say, and you hope that you're educating them, and you hope that you're reaching other members of the public, and then you leave. The first couple of meetings weren't very well attended. And by the end, those meetings were standing room only.
At the beginning, the water issue was definitely the greatest concern. This refinery would have used 20 to 25% of the entire Green River that supplies water to probably 1.5 million people. This was right at a time when the city of Tacoma put signs all over town and said, please conserve water, we are in an emergency drought.
Tacoma was a pawn in a global energy game that everyone else knew about, its lobbyists, politicians, but not necessarily people who lived in this community. And that was very upsetting.
But we rallied. We had hundreds of people show up at the local meetings.
They held a couple of scoping meetings where thousands of people showed up. At this scoping meeting, everybody that wanted to could get up and say their questions, their concerns, their comments.
The company was not prepared for the questions that were being asked.
Cliff Hetridge is a longtime Port of Tacoma commissioner.
And I think that the community became extremely active in their opposition to it. What was difficult was the kind of opposition that came with people that had not looked carefully at what the issues were all about.
Thousands of people had sincere, deep, and well-researched questions. So all these people took their own personal time to learn about these facilities. And I believe our community is better off for knowing all the things that we have learned. Nobody believed anything they said, and when it came to the point where they were forced to get an extension on their lease, they hadn't really produced anything about how they would try to conserve some water or conserve some electricity.
Northwest Innovation Works decided to take a pause to the project. A couple more weeks after that, they decided to withdraw the project.
While activists celebrated the demise of the methanol refinery, proponents like Lou Paulson, the director of strategic operations projects and risk management at the Port of Tacoma, saw the defeat in a different light.
I think we missed an opportunity to describe that this project was going to displace a substantial amount of coal out of the manufacturing processes in China. I think had we approached it from that standpoint, it would have reshaped the very way in which people looked at the project.
We knew all along that Northwest Innovation Works had actually planned to build 3 methanol refineries right here in the Northwest. After we defeated methanol in Tacoma, Northwest Innovation Works moved to Kalama and started up their refinery there in earnest. and we stand in solidarity with Kalaima and helped them out as much as we could with posters and banners and buttons and shared all our documents and information.
Kalaima is a very idyllic community. It's up on a hill. Most homes have amazing views of the Columbia River.
I can drive down to the marina, park, walk down to my boat, and in 5 minutes I can be on the river fishing.
The Port of Kalaima has provided waterfront access. They're also providing access for Northwest Innovation Works.
When I moved to Kalaima, I thought that the port had its big industries.
Sally Keeley is a 22-year resident of Kalaima and a mathematics professor at Clark College in Vancouver, Washington. She, along with her daughter Cambria and husband Mark, have been fighting the Kalaima methanol refinery since 2016.
I thought that they would be more progressive and bring in things that were more sustainable, maybe solar industry or making windmills.
It would be the largest methanol refinery in the world, which is pretty surprising because if you go to a town like Kalaima with a few thousand people, nothing there is the largest in the world.
Jasmine Zimmer-Stuckey was senior organizer for Columbia Riverkeeper from 2012 to 2019.
It's so out of proportion to what the community looks like, feels like, wants to be.
Many of the people who opposed the methanol refinery were veterans of past fossil fuel struggles along the Columbia River. 12 years earlier, a massive pipeline was being proposed to carry fracked gas to liquid natural gas export terminals planned for Clatsop County, Oregon, on the other side of the Columbia River, about 40 miles downstream from Kalaima. The pipeline would have crossed the properties of many landowners in Cowlitz County. These residents banded together with people in Oregon and over a 12-year period stopped all of the LNG projects from being built. But as they were defeating LNG, the largest coal terminal in North America was being proposed for Longview, just 9 miles north of Kalaima. So the LNG opponents refocused their efforts on fighting the coal terminal.
We were all in with the coal fight. We had actually an office in downtown Longview where we were staging all our field operations.
Columbia Riverkeeper was one of a handful of regional environmental groups opposing fossil fuel projects in Cowlitz County. Jasmine Zimmer-Stuckey was their point person in Longview.
I specifically remember this fellow walked into our office, kind of just off the street, and he said, you know, I hate the coal, it's the worst thing ever. I wish we were fighting the methanol refinery in Kalaima. And it was just like a message from the universe. And so we called a couple of our folks that we knew in Kalaima. We asked, did they know about this? They said, yes, they were concerned, they'd like to fight it. And so we said, great, we'd like to fight it with you.
We had this huge Columbia Riverkeeper hosted meeting to try to understand the actual facts and how to give comments in hearings. 2 days later, there was a huge hearing attended by over 1,000 people, most of them proponents of the project because of the jobs that they had been promised. Cambria, at age 14, spoke at that meeting. I did too.
As a parent, mathematician, educator, and citizen of Kalaima, I vehemently oppose the fracked gas to methanol refinery and export terminal. This refinery would emit over 1 million tons of carbon dioxide a year, the total carbon emissions of roughly 250,000 cars.
My name is Cambria Keeley, and I'm a citizen of Kalaima. Over the past 15 years, the aspects I and others have most treasured of my hometown were its pure water and clean air. Now, with the proposal of this methanol refinery, these features are threatened.
My neighbor and I attended the initial meeting to try to find out a little bit more about what was going on.
John Flynn is retired from Union Pacific Railroad and has lived in Kalaima since 2010.
The more information I gathered and the more involved I got, the stronger my objection to this project became.
I got on the internet and wanted to know about methanol refineries, how large they were and where they were located. I wanted to know what the impacts of a methanol refinery were on the local community.
Diane Dick, a 34-year resident of Cowlitz County, has been involved in environmental issues since 2012.
I realized this is going to be the world's largest methanol refinery here in Kalaima. Why Kalaima? We're not going to use the methanol in Kalaima. It's going to Asia.
NWIW chose Kalaima as a soft target, somewhat economically depressed. So they came in here touting tax revenue to the county, to the local school district. Jobs, jobs, jobs.
The recipe that has been used at every facility across the Northwest is first thing you do is make agreements with the building trades that they will build this project.
During construction, we'll employ up to 1,000 construction workers.
V. Gottlieb, president of Northwest Innovation Works, gave a presentation in 2017 at a clean air permit hearing for the methanol refinery.
We'll have approximately 200 full-time direct employees during operations, and we'll also provide for 500 indirect and induced jobs because of our project.
I don't know anybody in the town of Kalama who would be qualified to work in a petrochemical refinery. A lot of the people would be brought in either from China or from the Gulf Coast who have refinery experience.
I think we've been courted by speculators and entrepreneurs who realize that there is a certain naivety about this area and a certain provincialism. We're not aware of some of the broader issues, or we're not aware of the questions we need to ask.
Northwest Innovation Works has never built a methanol plant before. This way of taking fracked methane gas and turning it into methanol has never been done on an industrial scale before.
Where they propose to put it has been on dredge spoils. This is a naturally low-lying area. None of the port is diked, so it's all subject to sea level rise. You also have the impacts of large tanker vessels coming up the Columbia River and impacting other vessel traffic and fish and wildlife.
The plant would have a 240-foot flare stack for burning off excess volatile organic compounds.
What is methanol? Methanol is naturally occurring. Our bodies naturally produce methanol as part of how we process internally. When trees break down, they produce methanol. Methanol is the simplest alcohol known to man. It's non-carcinogenic. It's biodegradable, and it's odorless.
When you have methanol spill into a river, it basically is going to kill what's ever in the river.
Methanol can consume the oxygen as it mixes with water, and so you can have a fish kill associated with a methanol spill.
Dan Sears is the conservation director for Columbia Riverkeeper.
And the Columbia River, obviously, at the mouth of the Klamath River, that's really prime fishing territory.
This project site is proposed very, very near two of my favorite spots to fish for salmon in the Columbia River.
John Flynn retired to Klamath because of the area's outstanding fishing.
And I just cannot see myself out there in my boat, fishing with family and friends, with this methanol refinery looming over the river and spewing clouds of vapor and potentially hazardous byproducts into the air.
People are going to have to live next to this thing and every day stare at this massive plume hanging above them with all the volatile organic compounds and other contaminants that will be coming out of it.
The methanol plant is actually a three-phase operation.
Sally Keeley with Clean Air Kalama.
One of which is the 3.1-mile lateral pipeline from the Williams Northwest fracked gas pipeline that runs north-south over to the Klamath methanol plant.
Through the use of eminent domain, they would force their way through private property and a pioneer cemetery just to deliver the methane gas to this methanol refinery.
Eminent domain is used primarily for things like if you need to bring a major highway through or you have to expand an airport. It's not for corporate gain. And here we have eminent domain used to take private citizens' land for a private corporate LCC company to bring in this pipeline for their methanol plant so that we can export our natural resources.
There were some people up there who might not have been opposed to the methanol refinery, but they certainly were opposed to that pipeline.
To find like the impacted landowners along the pipeline, I just like looked at the tax files, property lots, and traced what I thought was the route of the Klamath Lateral Pipeline and sent a bunch of letters saying, are you on the pipeline route? If so, give me a call. And a couple of weeks later, I got a dozen phone calls.
In September 2018, Klamath methanol opponents gathered for a picnic at the historic Mount Pleasant Cemetery near Klamath.
Where we are standing is along the proposed pipeline route that would supply fracked gas from the Rockies in Canada or the Colorado Rockies to the proposed refinery. Along the road, you'll see pink flagging tape. That's the proposed pipeline route. The pipeline would be a high-pressure gas pipeline, 24 inches, that would come along with a 100-foot construction right-of-way and a 75-foot permanent easement for the company to access the pipeline whenever they needed it. All of you are giving your time, and we're asking you to give your time in the future to help bring an end to this project, just like you have with the coal terminal in Longview and the oil terminal in Vancouver. So thank you very much.
The Port of Kalama is the landlord for the land that Northwest Innovation Works wants to build on. And Cowlitz County is slated to receive a significant amount of tax revenue from this project. All of the folks who are slated to make a lot of money are the ones making the decisions around the environmental review.
Everybody, there's Richard DeBolt. He is our state representative member, and he works for NWIW. This is a complete conflict of interest and breach of code of ethics.
Hey.
So I think everybody should ask on the way out how it is not a breach of the code of ethics to work for this company and receive money from the Chinese government. Thank you.
The president of the company, the Godley, was lobbying to have NWIW receive favorable tax treatment for this project. So at the same time they're saying this is going to be profitable for the community, they're trying to reduce their tax burden at the state legislature.
Diane Dick, Cowlitz County activist.
And having someone like Richard DeBolt in the state legislature cast a shadow on the ethics involved in having our government officials support these projects before the permits are even issued.
We actually did some records requests, and we found that Washington State thought that it was going to need to have its environmental review be housed under FSEC, the Energy Facility Siting Evaluation Council. Northwest Innovation Works followed up with a few emails that we also got through public records requests saying, we actually think that it's a project that is more appropriate to be reviewed by the Port of Kalama and Cowlitz County. And unfortunately, the state acquiesced.
About a year ago, things were looking pretty grim when some of the permits were granted.
Columbia Riverkeeper, Sierra Club, and Center for Biological Diversities appealed some of the findings of the environmental impact statement and the shorelines permits, and we won. They agreed with our claim that the project would need to have a new environmental impact statement that actually looked at the emissions from fracking, emissions along the pipeline route with methane leakage, and emissions from shipping. The legal victory invalidated a number of the permits that Northwest Innovation Works was holding.
Once those numbers are made public, I am very, very hopeful that our governor, the State Department of Ecology, the Department of Natural Resources, will all come out against permitting this project.
So we're here today to learn how to write public comments for the comment period we're in right now regarding the Kalama Methanol Refinery. Folks from the Pacific Northwest have submitted over 18,000 public comments in opposition to this project. So although Kalama is a small town, you are not alone in your opposition, in your concern. Folks from around the region are standing up to support you.
There are two opportunities during these environmental reviews for the public to get involved. The first is scoping, and then the second is when the draft environmental impact statement comes out.
But when the draft supplemental environmental impact statement was released, local headlines proclaimed that Kalama methanol will result in a reduction of greenhouse gas emissions.
I wasn't surprised to see the way that they spun the numbers and downplayed the ramifications, in particular by choosing this ridiculously low number in the methane leaks from the fracking well site and the pipelines.
Sally Keeley with Clean Air Kalama.
The numbers that other reports are showing is between 2.7% leakage rate and a 17% leakage rate, and yet they chose to use in this DSEIS a 0.32% leakage rate.
That number comes from a study from the year 2000 by the Canadian Association of Petroleum Producers. All the science that's happened since then has shown leakage is many times worse, not only in the U.S., but also in Canada.
Peter Erickson is a senior scientist with Stockholm Environment Institute in Seattle. During comment writing workshops, opponents circulated a discussion brief he co-wrote that examined Kalama methanol's extensive greenhouse gas emissions and also questioned whether the methanol would be used for fuel rather than for making plastics, as Northwest Innovation Works was claiming.
A recent paper published in the journal Science in 2018 looked at almost all the studies over the last decade. They came up with a system-wide methane loss rate of 2.3%.
Northwest Innovation Works commissioned the Low Carbon Prosperity Institute in Seattle to write a paper challenging Stockholm Environment Institute's findings and supporting the draft Supplemental Environmental Impact Statement conclusions. Kevin Tempest was the lead researcher.
This is a long-term infrastructure project, so if it goes into place over the course of time, leakage rates aren't going to be what they are today necessarily. I would like to be optimistic that we're going to do something about methane leakage over the long run because it's something that can be addressed.
There's not very much reason to be optimistic. There's no indication that overall methane loss is really going down. And we've just had a premier elected in Alberta who based his platform on rolling back regulations on the oil and gas industry. Some of the gas for this project would probably come from Alberta. Some of the gas in the EIS that is claimed as British Columbia is not, it's Albertan. And there's no excuse for using a very low, less than 1% methane loss rate in the EIS.
In sharp contrast to the initial methanol refinery public hearings a few years earlier, which were dominated by supporters of the project, the December 2018 public hearing for the draft supplemental environmental impact statement was filled with vocal and impassioned opponents of the methanol refinery. Local residents were joined by hundreds of people from across the region who voiced their opposition, including a contingent from Tacoma. The only supporters were businesses with financial interests in the project, building trades union members, and local elected officials.
As a member of the Cowlitz County Board of Commissioners, I congratulate the applicant. In a world filled with significant trade-offs, where the good is not the enemy of the perfect, I believe this proposal is an important step forward in building a cleaner future for the entire Pacific Rim, based on a decrease in coal to methanol production in Asia of approximately 12 million metric tons a year. The opponents came dangerously close to supporting a rather racist attitude if they believe we have our riches and wealthy standard of living, you don't get yours.
Good evening, everybody. My name is Claudia Wiedner. The people in Dalian, China, would be recipients of this methanol if it's not being used for fuel but as a feedstock as promised. The people in Dalian have been in the streets by the tens of thousands because the plastic factories in China are polluting the air so badly that the people in Dalian cannot breathe. Do we want to further that? Do we want to be the plastic spigot to the world and pollute the air here and pollute it over there as well?
My name's Paul Thiers. I'm a professor at Washington State University, Vancouver. I'm trained as a political scientist, and my primary research area is China. The claim of net reduction in greenhouse gas emissions relies on this idea that the methanol will be used to feed the chemical industry. In fact, when oil drops below $80 a barrel, naphtha cracking, the traditional method for making olefins in China, is the cheapest and preferred method. Since we're just over $50 a barrel now, I think there's almost no chance that any of this product will be used to offset coal. If the price of oil is taken into account, it's very clear that this product is going to end up being used as transportation fuel, which will change the GHG analysis completely. And I think that the DSEIS needs to be redone for that reason.
My name is Cam Keeley, and I am a 17-year-old resident of Kalama, Washington. Northwest Innovation Works and the Port of Kalama spin their truth in their favor by cherry-picking data to put in the DSEIS. One glaring example is using stats from the United Nations IPCC 2007 assessment, but not even referencing the more recent IPCC 2014 assessment.
They, in their EIS, are using incorrect analysis from 18, 19 years ago. It really raises questions about what their motivations are, and when they don't respond to the basic points about what they're doing, it starts to look like they're purposefully obfuscating the underlying facts about methane and about how methane contributes to the impact of Kalama.
People are sick of being walked on. They're sick of being told by their decision makers that all you deserve is increased cancer rates because of this dirty coal terminal, followed by this dirty oil terminal, followed by two propane export terminal proposals. It has just been piled on to these community members in Cowlitz County, and they have had enough.
You're listening to Holding the Thin Green Line, Part 2, A View from the Blast Zone.
As species are disappearing, as the salmon are going extinct, the once lived and plugged the rivers literally, orcas, as Telequa carried around her deceased calf for thousands of miles in several circuits around the Salish Sea, screaming out to the world, asking the world to save us. Look what you have done to the water. Look what you have done to the natural world. But don't just save us. Save yourselves from your own foolishness. That was her message, and we got to listen to that.
Paul T. Oakton of the Vancouver Island Saanich Tribe and founder of the Protectors of the Salish Sea tells the story of Telequa, a southern resident orca whose pod faces extinction. As she carried her dead calf in circles around the Salish Sea during the summer of 2018, she riveted the world and became an icon for citizens opposing massive fossil fuel projects in the Pacific Northwest, particularly in Tacoma.
Tacoma has recently been confronted with two really big fossil fuel projects.
Eric DePlace, director of the Thin Green Line at Sightline Institute in Seattle.
There was a proposal to create a methanol refinery. It would have been the biggest in the world. There was a huge public backlash to it. And at the same time that backlash was happening, there was another project, Tacoma LNG project, and that was kind of cranking ahead steadily while everyone was focused on opposing the big methanol project.
We're in an industry that is trying to move away from fossil fuels. There is no immediate solution.
Lou Paulson with the Port of Tacoma.
Shouldn't we deploy LNG, the best available fuel, until we come up with something better? Because if we don't, if the rest of the industry makes the right transition to a cleaner fuel, then not only will we lose business, but we'll be left with the dirty ships.
Tote Maritime Shipping is a cargo company that runs two ships weekly from Tacoma to Alaska.
John Carlton is a resident of Tacoma and an activist with the grassroots environment group Redefine Tacoma.
Tote currently uses bunker fuel to power their ships. Because of restrictions on exhaust emissions put forward by the International Maritime Organization, they've chosen the route of using liquefied natural gas in the future.
Tote knew that they had the new requirements that they had to adhere to.
Claire Petridge, Tacoma Port Commissioner.
They began talking with companies that would be able to provide the LNG to them. So they went to Puget Sound Energy.
Puget Sound Energy is a privately held utility. They serve a lot of Western Washington. Now they sing a song of low carbon future and environmental responsibility. While they're singing that song, they are one of the last utilities to be burning coal in Montana and still delivering that to customers in Western Washington. They have systematically stalled out climate policy and carbon pricing legislation. They know what they're doing politically, and that poses an extra challenge for opposing their projects.
While we were really busy fighting methanol,
Claudia Riedner, co-founder of Redefine Tacoma.
The city and the port and Puget Sound Energy were already way down the road into building this LNG refinery.
There wasn't like meetings that you could go to get educated.
Nanette Reitz with Redefine Tacoma.
You weren't going to the Department of Ecology and they were having information meetings. There wasn't public comment. It had already closed. The environmental impact study was already finished. We were just left out of the process.
The Tacoma LNG project is designed to take fracked gas, supercool it into a liquid state, and then store it.
We're on the Blair Hylabos Peninsula at the Port of Tacoma, where the liquefied natural gas tank for Puget Sound Energy is going up. This is going to be not only a storage location for liquefied natural gas, it's going to be a distribution hub. And so they're going to be putting this into trucks and driving it off-site. They're going to be piping it over to Tote Transport Services to fuel their ships. And they're also intending to use it in some fashion via rail.
Normally with LNG, you do not site it in an urban area because liquefied natural gas is extremely combustible. If it explodes, it is an enormous bomb that can go off. And so it's sited right in the middle of Tacoma, and you're going to put it on ships. That raises concerns about how you move those ships safely in and out of the harbor and how you keep all the ships away from them while those ships are moving.
It's in a liquefaction zone. So if we had an earthquake, it's on an earthquake fault. It's in the Lahars zone for Mount Rainier. And not only that, it's surrounded by a huge petroleum tank farm named Targa and then also U.S. oil.
This LNG facility would be 14 stories tall and about 130 feet wide. It would hold 8 million gallons of LNG.
You keep it at a temperature that's negative 260 degrees.
Tariqa Powell is a researcher at Sightline Institute.
At that temperature, it actually converts into a liquid and it condenses in volume by 1/600.
Those 8 million gallons in the holding tank translate to 166 kilotons of TNT. So that's about the equivalent of 11 Hiroshima bombs.
Once LNG is taken out of its storage tank and it's no longer at negative 260 degrees, it can very rapidly convert back to a gas. And those conversions from liquid state to gaseous state are where you encounter a lot of the safety hazards. And so the more often you're transferring this fuel back and forth, the more safety hazards you have to consider.
The tank of LNG cannot be permitted if the approved analysis for that facility under the EIS would indicate that an explosion or an event on the premises is going to extend beyond the boundaries of the site. That is a fact that is dismissed by many who oppose this, but it is factual.
The city assured me that in the final EIS, they had come to the conclusion that if there were an accident at the site, it would be all contained within the fence line of the property, which is roughly 500 feet. I found that hard to believe, so I wanted to see the computer simulations that demonstrate that was the case. So I requested to the city for that information, and I was the next day given a notification to show up in court because Puget Sound Energy had acquired an injunction to keep me from having that information.
They said, no, we're not going to do it because it's a terrorist threat. And the judge said that you have to do it if you're going to build it in the community.
Steve Storms is a retired energy and environmental engineer and a longtime resident of Northeast Tacoma.
PSE appealed it and said, even if we wanted to, Homeland Security deems it a security threat for a terrorist, and we're not going to do it. The judge ruled against them again, said that you have to do that.
When we got the simulation results through that court case, what we found out was that they had not done any testing of potential catastrophes. And so that's why all simulations of accidents on the facility were always contained within the fence line.
They said we did a safety model and it passed and everything is going to stay within the 550-foot property line. Well, what about the terrorist attack? Well, we didn't deem that probability high enough, so we didn't do that. Well, you just told us you weren't going to release it because of a terrorist. Well,
The final environmental impact statement was signed on November 9th.
Todd Hay, Advocates for a Cleaner Tacoma.
The fire department actually ran modeling on November 10th, which showed there were a blast at the site, how far out it would go from the site facility.
I did a public records request with the city of Tacoma to see whether or not the fire department had done any analysis on the safety of this facility. And when I got the records, it turned out that the fire department had done studies, but none of that information had made it into the original environmental impact statement.
The Tacoma Fire Department found that if it were just one of the pipelines that would break, there would be a potential explosion that would go way beyond the fence line, and that the gas could go as far as a mile from the site up into Northeast Tacoma.
I think the model that you're talking about was a model that was a very rudimentary tailgate sort of modeling system that responders use when they arrive at a site. It does not take into consideration a number of factors, including topography. It was not germane and would not have been an approved modeling process for the EIS.
We did our own models, and we saw, using the same equipment model that the Tacoma Fire Department has, that the blast zone went to I-5, which is 3.2 miles from the facility. The Puyallup tribe has done maps of the community to show the 1 and 2 and 3 mile blast zones. And I'm in that. My home is in that. And all of my friends and family in the Salish Sea are in that blast zone.
We call it the blast zone because we don't know.
Annette Bryan is with the Puyallup Tribal Council and is an enrolled tribal member of the Puyallup Tribe of Indians.
Because no one's done an analysis.
They claim that they are building a fence around the facility, and this fence is going to contain any gases that could leak.
Situated in the Port of Tacoma is an ICE detention facility where 1,600 people would be sitting ducks, as the fire department has no plans to evacuate those people in an emergency.
They believe that LNG is a bridge fuel, that it's a transition fuel to get off of dirty coal and diesel.
It's not going to be forever. We'll only be doing this as a bridge to get from here to there. But they have a 50-year lease. Now another 50 years of burning a fossil fuel that's actually worse than even coal or oil. It's not a bridge from here to there. It's a bridge to nowhere.
25 years ago, moving to gas arguably was an environmentally reasonable choice to make. And back then, almost all gas was extracted with conventional drilling techniques.
But natural gas is not extracted in the way that it used to be. It's using tons of chemicals, millions of gallons of water. It's destroying water tables in communities, poisoning their water.
Someone once said that perfection is the enemy of the good, and I think that applies here.
Lou Paulson with the Port of Tacoma.
Fracking exists. It's generating different fuel sources that industry can use. For our part, we want to use the cleanest one.
If you look at the reality of LNG, even though it's also a fossil fuel, but it is a cleaner one.
Claire Petridge, Tacoma Port Commissioner.
That's one of the steps in the direction of moving away from fossil fuels.
If you had started using gas as a bridge fuel in the 70s or 80s and we'd transitioned away from coal and oil then, okay, there's an argument there. transitioning away now by using gas simply means that we're going to lock in fossil fuel use for the next 30 or 40 or 50 years. We cannot afford that much time on fossil fuels. We have to transition to fully clean, zero carbon energy. We have the technology to do that, but the biggest impediment to renewable development is the abundance of cheap gas.
There's not a panacea here. There's no question that natural gas, if released into the atmosphere, has a significant greenhouse effect. It's a choice of options, and we see LNG as the preferred transitional fuel.
Where does the gas go after it comes out of the ground?
Sandra Steingraber is a writer, biologist, and anti-fracking activist.
Well, there is a massive amount of infrastructure involved to take that oil and gas from the point of its extraction to wherever the burner tip is, and that takes the form of pipelines and compressor stations and hundreds of underground and above ground gas and oil storage facilities. And here in the Northwest, LNG facilities. Methane leaks at every step of this process. From the moment the drill bit goes into the ground and contacts the shale, methane is pouring out of the hole. Methane is being loaded into the atmosphere, 86 times more powerful than carbon dioxide at being able to trap heat in our atmosphere.
The port considers itself the economic engine of Pierce County. And so whatever they believe is good for the port is good for Tacoma.
Kristen Eng, Tacoma lawyer, running for a position on the Tacoma Port Commission.
They never really once questioned what else could there be for this area.
Tacoma is industrialized, and I think that has been much of the strength of Tacoma, and particularly in our ability to provide family wage jobs to people.
When you look at the number of jobs that are being projected for the LNG plant,
Bill Kapinski, professor at the University of Puget Sound.
I think it's something like 18 full-time jobs with no guarantee that they're going to people who are from Tacoma.
I've spoken with the longshore workers in Tacoma on many occasions, and they've said to me quite plainly that they would be opposed to an oil project because they get the dangers of it. But they're more comfortable with liquefied natural gas. They think there are going to be some air quality benefits.
People who are longshoremen and are loading ship, they have difficulties with some of the fuel. Crane operators are also working over those stacks. And so everybody who works in a port is concerned about making sure that we have cleaner air.
Tote actually already plugs into shore power, so their ships are not burning diesel when they are at berth.
Even when they are under power, they are using a much cleaner fuel than they used to use, and that's true actually for a lot of marine vessel operators. It makes the relative benefit of using LNG much, much smaller. And so it's not nearly as big a deal as we were told at the outset of this project.
When you look at the amount of money that Puget Sound Energy spends on sending out information to the public, you see on your TV that this is cleaner fuel. And you know that the air is getting worse and you want clean air for your kids, you're going to support it. You see that over and over and over and you believe it. Just like you hear a song on the radio over and over and over, you're going to start singing it out loud.
Two demonstrators who occupied the construction crane on Monday believe the land here belongs to the Puyallup tribe. Puyallup tribal elder Ramona Bennett says she's certain of it.
I furnished them a reservation map, and I showed them that's our tidelands. It's our estuary.
But the city and Port of Tacoma have long said the land belongs to the city, and that's why it leased the property to Puget Sound Energy to build its liquefied natural gas plant and giant holding tank. And that's why police arrested Cynthia Lynette and Marilyn Kimmerling at a demonstration last May for trespassing. But a municipal court jury this week acquitted those two, not guilty because of the testimony of Bennett.
When anybody builds anything in Tacoma, you have to have all your permits before you get to build.
Claudia Riedner, Redefine Tacoma.
Now with Puget Sound Energy, they don't have all their permits, and in particular, they don't have the air permit. The other permits that they do have are not valid until they have the air permit in place. But when you go down to the site, you can see that the entire tank is already built.
I know for a fact if Claudia went to build a chicken house in her yard without a permit, they'd be down on her in a flash.
Ramona Bennett is a former chairwoman of the Puyallup Tribe of Indians and served on the council from 1968 to 1979.
This Puget Sound Energy, whose owners don't even live in America, they can build an 8 million gallon storage unit with no permit, and they can get away with it.
We wanted them to put a stop work order on it, and they tend to think that that's not needed, that if after everything is done, that they can issue a monetary penalty.
Steve Storms, retired chemical engineer.
And I'm sure that Puget Sound Energy thinks that's just great because they can continue to build for a full year without a permit and maybe get fined $1 million, and that's the cost of doing business that will probably get passed on to the ratepayers anyway.
I don't believe that they have broken any laws on the permitting at all. What they have built has been according to what the permits are that they have been given.
Claire Petridge, Tacoma Port Commissioner.
And yes, they are optimistic that they will get all the permits. Let's put it that way.
The Puyallup tribe has filed stop work orders with a whole bunch of different agencies that are in charge. These agencies have not stepped forward to enforce any kind of a stop work order.
Outside the PSE headquarters in downtown Bellevue, where protesters are blocking the main entrance, they have put up what's called a longhouse. It's a traditional Native American house, and they are protesting the liquid natural gas plant proposed in Tacoma, which is currently under construction, though it does not have the proper permits. And they put up the structure to say, hey, if you guys can build without proper permits, I guess we can too.
Huxley Hale, good day. My name is Annette Bryan, and I'm here from the Puyallup Tribal Council. The City of Tacoma and Puget Sound Clean Air Agency have failed to consult with the Puyallup Tribe. They have allowed PSE to construct the liquefied natural gas plant without the proper permits. Consultation with the Puyallup Tribe means you don't build unless you consult and come to an agreement with the tribe. Failure to properly consult with the tribe is a violation of federal law.
Puget Sound Energy proceeded to develop this plan, which is right in the heart of our reservation.
James Reinout is a Puyallup Tribal Council member with the Puyallup Tribe of Indians in Tacoma.
Our wonderful leaders in the past realized that there's basically land that is untitled, and we had the rights to those lands because they were our original riverbed land basin.
Because my mom's uncle and her cousin had documents relating to the titles and the deeds to these lands, the government had to enter into a settlement. Well, of course, everything's already built up by then. You've got the railroads, you've got industry. So it'd be a little hard to get them to get up and move, but they did acknowledge that, yeah, the Puyallup tribes had claim to this, and that's why they had to do the land claim settlement.
I started on the Port Commission in 1983.
John McCarthy is a commissioner at the Port of Tacoma.
And at that time, the Port of Tacoma was involved with litigation with the Puyallup tribe involving former riverbed lands of the Puyallup River and whether the tribe had an ownership interest in those lands. A lot of the land that was owned by the port was subject to a cloud of those claims.
My mom was a secretary on the committee, and she was always going to these meetings. It was so important that she would leave my siblings and I at home. So I knew this was a really, really big deal.
The commission wanted to enter into negotiations with the tribe. And after 5 years of hard work by a lot of people, we were able to reach an agreement, which at the time was the largest land claim settlement of a Native tribe in the lower 48 states.
I was told that it was, if you don't negotiate, we're going to take your land. So they really thought that, you know, we better do what we can in this negotiation or we're going to lose everything.
We got several pieces of property, but they were all highly contaminated. And so here we're stuck with these parcels of land in a highly industrial area with over 20 Superfund sites. We gave up jurisdiction to air quality regulations and water quality regulations on the tide flats and in any area that's not in tribal trust.
We gave them the opportunity to be very successful, and their tribal enterprises are extremely successful. They've been able to give benefits to each of their members on a monthly basis in a substantial amount. So it's been a great benefit to the tribe.
In the land claim settlement, we did give up rights to the lands that were there that we had originally held title to in exchange for some monetary promises that weren't all realized. For them to say, you have this big chunk of land that's a beautiful piece of property, now go out and make it work, is like telling the Native American on a horse who's nomadic to stay on this allotment farmland and grow yourself some vegetables and sell them to take care of your family.
There was an estuary. You could see salmon staging there from the 11th Street Bridge, and it was all filled in. The salmon slowed down, and all of our natural resources were just dwindling. Those are some of the changes that I immediately recognized from the settlement that wasn't beneficial. We had made sold you land, but what gave you the right to fill this in?
40 years ago, I had my little 5-year-old son, Lucha Bates, with me. And I was driving across the flats. We've never called it the port, it always was the flats. And he started crying. And he said, I never seen the cedar trees. I never seen the deers. And he could see what wasn't there anymore. That's all there is, you know, is what isn't there anymore.
We have to develop a relationship with the Port of Tacoma. We have to develop a relationship with the City of Tacoma. Unless we do that, we're not going to be able to have these hard conversations or be seated at the table. We'll always be on the menu. We are a government, we're a sovereign nation, and we have to, on a government-to-government level, engage in conversations with these folks.
It's been an uphill battle because Puget Sound Energy have been funding just about every politician's campaign.
The Puget Sound Clean Air Agency, which is responsible for issuing an air operating permit, determined that the final environmental impact statement didn't include enough analysis for greenhouse gas emissions. It didn't include all those emissions that would happen upstream from the plant or downstream from the plant itself.
Todd Hay, Advocates for a Cleaner Tacoma.
So we're going to require that a supplemental EIS is done. And then you look at the company they actually selected to do the SEIS, it's the exact same company that did the FEIS. Does that instill a lot of confidence in the public that they're really going to get a good answer here, or is this an answer that's already kind of politically baked?
The draft supplemental environmental impact statement was released on October 8, 2018.
The SEIS purports that if they put the LNG plant in place, that we'll actually have reduced greenhouse gas emissions than the current status quo. I have been looking at it, and a number of other local scientists have been really reviewing the details of the document. And on a number of fronts, there are just inaccuracies in the report. They're using older scientific data. I was very surprised by just the number of fallacies, typos, misinformation in the document.
My name is Tara Doyle Enneking. I'm a longtime Salmon Beach resident and a business owner. The recently released draft SEIS confirmed my expectation that the use of LNG for the maritime sector would result in better air quality for those of us who live and work around here. Also expected, but still frustrating, is the refusal of local activists to embrace scientific study, not just the studies they like and acknowledge, but also recognize that in the spirit of making progress, you cannot sacrifice the good for the sake of the perfect.
Hi, my name is Dr. Heather Price. I'm an atmospheric chemist and a climate scientist from Seattle, Washington, and I was a climate scientist with a group at Harvard. The impact statement that was put together should be looking at the leakage rates. If you have methane leaking at anywhere between 2 and 3%, it is as bad as coal for its global warming potential. Right now, they're using numbers coming out of BC of 0.4. All of the emissions data that I have used has been anywhere from about 1.9% leakage rate up to as high as 17% leakage rate.
My name is Bradley Thompson. I'm a registered nurse. I'm also a volunteer with 350 Tacoma. Mostly tonight, I'd like to note that your draft SEIS was released on October 8th. The same day that the UN Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change released its urgent wake-up call. This report, prepared by the world's leading climate scientists, says that we must cap the rising global temperature to just 1.5 degrees, and this must happen much faster than previously recognized. It means that we've got to stop building new 50-year fossil fuel infrastructure starting like 20 years ago. It means that an environmental impact statement shouldn't compare new fracked fossil gas infrastructure to a no-action alternative, but rather to a do-something-different, please, alternative.
In April 2019, the final supplemental environmental impact statement was released.
At the beginning, when there were thousands and thousands of comments for this SEIS, I was hopeful that this public agency would actually take those concerns into consideration.
Claudia Riedner, Redefine Tacoma.
But when we saw the final product, we realized that they did not take any of our comments seriously. They were dismissive. Many of our questions weren't answered. And the final study is really no different from the draft study, and the flaws remain, the doubts remain.
A month later, Washington Governor Jay Inslee, who had launched his presidential campaign as a climate champion, finally changed his position on LNG and methanol.
Being committed now to 100% clean electricity and signing a bill prohibiting fracking in Washington state, I cannot in good conscience support continued construction of a liquefied natural gas plant in Tacoma or a methanol production facility in Kalama. I want to be clear that my stance on these projects does not change our state's regulatory process. Our state agencies will comply with state and federal laws to ensure a rigorous and objective review of projects.
What I would have hoped that Governor Inslee would have said is that I oppose any project that uses fracked gas.
Bill Kapinski, professor at the University of Puget Sound.
Because the climate crisis we're in is so grave and it is happening so quickly that I will use all of the powers at my disposal as governor to stop it, period.
What's really important is that our community stands together to protect the thin green line and to build resiliency against the threat of climate chaos. But instead, we're still forced to fight against all fossil fuel infrastructure that is trying to sneak in.
5 months after Governor Inslee announced his opposition to the Kalama Methanol Refinery in Tacoma LNG, Indigenous water protectors and their allies walked for 4 days, from the Tacoma LNG tank to the Washington State Capitol, 47 miles away. There, they called on the governor to turn his words into action.
My words to Governor Inslee is, how are you going to run for president when you haven't cleaned up your own backyard? So step up by cleaning it up. We need more than just words, Governor Inslee. We need you to stop this. We need executive orders saying to stop the Kalama methanol plant, to stop the Tacoma LNG facility, to stop the expansion of U.S. oil.
Jay Inslee, we are stepping forward. The youth around the world are stepping forward. Will you step forward and say, my position, my job does not matter, but the lives of my own children and their children matter?
Holding the Thin Green Line was written, narrated, and produced by Barbara Bernstein, who also composed and performed the music. Melissa Marsden, Patsy Kohlberg, and Lisa Rubman were editing consultants. This program was funded by the Regional Arts and Culture Council, the Fund for Investigative Journalism, and Stephen and Jan Marks. Special thanks to Columbia Riverkeeper, Power Pass Frack Gas, Jasmine Zimmer-Stuckey, Dan Sears, Claudia Riedner, and John Carlton. For more information about how to hold the Thin Green Line, go to our website, holdingthethingreenline.org.